Jake approached me this week with an idea for a new song, and I said, played it for me, and I said, sounds good, but it'd be great if there were a fourth verse about the church. You should write one. And he said, okay. And he did, and it was cool, right?
Effort.
And brought a little soul to our morning, too, so that was nice. Well, I want to start off by letting you know that we just returned the pastors and elders from about a 24-hour retreat over the last couple days. We went on Friday evening and came back Saturday evening, and we spent some time praying and visioning and listening to each other, being with each other. We did our annual ice cream crawl. I think I set the record with 5 scoops of ice cream at 3 different places, so you can admire or judge that as you deem appropriate. But first thing I want to say is just thank you to all of you who submitted prayer requests on cards. That is one of the best things that we do as pastors and elders, is just to sit down. We gathered this time in pairs and distributed the cards and just read cards and prayed for you. It is such a privilege to be able to pray specifically for things going on in your lives, and that is just always our highlight. So thank you. And we use those cards continually to pray throughout the year. We copy them and give them to all the pastors and elders. So it's a great privilege to know what's going on in your lives and pray for you. We also want to say thank you for this place we find ourselves now, with the building starting to be open and the rooms, if you've been able to see them, they're freshly painted and looking good. And all of that happened because of the generosity from all of you. We are amazed that God provided for everything we needed for this remodel, and we have enough to finish off the things we wanted to finish off. So thank you. It's just incredibly humbling to know how generous this body is. And because of that, we're excited to kick off some new things with these new buildings. You'll be noticing on Sunday mornings a few new opportunities coming up. The PBC DNA class that's happening right now in the upper room is one of those. That's actually part of a series of rotating electives that we're going to hold, covering different topics. So the next one is going to be on unity and diversity. We're going to have several weeks on aging, death, and dying. And the intent there is to have kind of different topics roll through so that people that are interested in different things could come and be there for 3 to 5 weeks. We're also re-kicking off our college breakfast this morning, and in the room that we're calling to study. The newly married startup group is meeting every week now. If you're in your first 5 years of marriage, that's a group for just coming together and learning and praying together about marriage. And then we're also kicking off a new class called Equip that's going to start on another couple weeks, but you'll hear more about that. That's a chance for some more Bible teaching and community, and to just dig a little bit deeper than we can sometimes go on a Sunday morning. So we're excited. Keep your eye out for what happens in these various spaces. Another thing we did this weekend was to talk about, where do we go from here? What does it look like for us as a church, having finished this big project, to what's next? And we had a real sense of gratitude for where we are, but an awareness that the last couple years around here have been a little internally focused. For good reasons, but we've been fixing up our buildings and preparing ourselves internally. And there's a sense of wanting to see God make us a blessing externally. So we looked at Genesis 12, where God speaks to Abraham and tells him, you are to be a blessing to the nations around you, and thought, what does that look like for us to be a blessing to Palo Alto, to the communities that we live and work and play in? How can we do that? How can we shift from being internally focused now that we're ready and equipped to be a blessing? And actually, some things have already started happening. I met with a woman this week from Palo Alto, and she introduced me virtually to the new mayor of Palo Alto and said she was being toured our facility. We're hosting one city meeting here in February. And she said, we're always looking for rooms to hold city meetings, and you guys have such a beautiful facility. And I said, that's great. Come use our facility. And we'd love to bless the city by being a place where they can meet and see our Bible verses and maybe think about Jesus. And if we can bless our city in that way, we would love that. So if you have ideas along those lines or energy, that's kind of what we're trying to start thinking about. How can we as a church be a blessing to the communities around us? This morning, we're going to be thinking about what it means to be the church. We're going to be looking at a passage that has defined us as a church. And as we see, that prepares us then to do just that, to look externally. But first, I want to think a little bit about technology, because I'm a bit of a gadget guy. And, you know, we live in this amazing time in the history of the world where people are inventing really cool things. There's all sorts of new stuff to play with out there. And I came across this video recently about a robot that you can buy and play with. And I just want to watch a short little clip. It's kind of a fun clip, just to get us thinking along a certain line. So let's watch this clip.
So here he is, and as you can tell, he is made up of a number of different parts and components. Once he's built, there's a number of different ways that you can use him. You can interact using these buttons here to put him in a number of different modes. This is where you would put a phone, for example, if you want to use the app and have him mimic your movement. And then he'll try to mimic my movement. See, there you go, hands up, hands down, all the way down.
That last look was the whole reason I wanted to show that video. I love that. There's some kind of a fascination with creating a body that acts like a person. You know, we have machines, we have technology that do things, and there's currently this, you know, move towards artificial intelligence and big data and machine learning and stuff. Machines acting more and more like people, but there's something particularly special about creating a machine that looks like a body. And that robot, you know, looks vaguely human, right? It's got a torso and limbs and big eyes and, you know. But to have a body that functions like a human is kind of this incredible goal. And if you think about how complex our physical bodies are, emotion and movement and healing and physicality and growth and all the things that our bodies do, is it possible that we could recreate that? That technology could arrive there? How do you assemble something that complex? How do you build a body? Well, this is the second week of our series on PBC DNA, why we do what we do. And we're looking for 5 weeks at some of the values and themes that have shaped us in particular as a community. We've called it DNA partly because these things aren't always obvious to us as a church. It's not like we have these five things on pillars on our website. It's not like we print them in our bulletin and we talk about them every week. But if you're here regularly, if you've been here for a while, you start to see these are the things that kind of direct us, that guide us, that help us to make decisions in a certain way rather than others' ways. And so we want to talk about those and explore them and affirm that these have been the things that have guided us for the past 70 years. And we pray that they would continue to guide us, that God would be faithful to continue leading us in that way. Now, in the first century, there would have been a lot of metaphors that could have been used to describe the church. You could have described the church as a guild. There were guilds of artisans that banded together for economic and professional support. You could have described the church as a sect, as a group of people that branched off from an existing group and created a whole new thing. You could have described them as a school of thought, some group of people gathered around a set of ideas that defined them. You could have defined the church as a nation, a government with roles and rule and coordination, or a new ethnic category, a new identity that defined who people were. But none of those were the primary metaphor that the biblical authors chose to use to describe the church. Instead, they described it as a body. A human body with all of its complexities and beauty and fascination. So this morning we're going to talk about what that looks like. We're going to talk about our body life. Incidentally, that's one of the amazing things about the Bible is that so many of the metaphors used in the scriptures are universal metaphors. For all of history, people have known what it is like to have a body. And unless technology takes a dark turn, from all of history on, we will know what it's like to have a body. And so the scriptures use this metaphor because we understand it. We grasp it immediately. We know what is being talked about. And so that's what we want to unpack this morning. And to do that, we're going to look at a passage that has shaped us maybe more so than any other passage as a church. It's in Ephesians 4, and it has to do with the nature of the church. Theologians call the study of the church ecclesiology. It's a fancy word, but basically means what is the church supposed to be? And you could say that at PBC, our ecclesiology is body life. The church is to be like a body. We'll start by reading this passage as a whole. We're going to do Ephesians 4, verses 11 to 16, and then we're going to highlight certain sections of it and go back to it and make some observations about what that means for us. So I'll begin by reading this passage, Ephesians 4, starting in verse 11. And he, that is God, gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the shepherds and teachers to equip the saints for the work of ministry, for building up the body of Christ, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to mature manhood, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, so that we may no longer be children tossed to and fro by the waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by human cunning, by craftiness and deceitful schemes. Rather, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part is working properly, makes the body grow so that it builds itself up in love. As we look at this passage in detail, we're going to be primarily asking four questions. Who are we? What do we do? How do we do it? And why do we do it? We're going to look at our roles. We look at the responsibilities that we have, the relationships that knit us together, and the result of doing all this. By God's grace, we hope that this passage will continue to be our DNA as a church. Well, the passage starts off by describing four or five different kinds of people. Because of the grammar, there's some debate about whether the shepherds and teachers are one category or two, but for our purposes, we're going to consider this to be four categories of people: apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, and teachers. And we want to understand a little bit about what these different kinds of people do. Apostles launch new endeavors. They are the church planters. They are the entrepreneurs. They are the ones who pioneer new ministries. They carry the gospel to places that have never heard of Jesus. They implement creative solutions to problems, and they start new things, and they craft things that nobody's ever thought of. There may not be capital A apostles today like there were in the New Testament, but there are still people today who act in apostolic ways. And we need people like this. We need people who launch new ideas, who like to take risks, and who are comfortable going into uncharted territories. Prophets are those individuals who generally operate outside of the institution. Prophets generally don't have positions in an organization, but they're the ones that call people to account. They're the ones that say the things that nobody else really wants said, but everybody really needs to hear every now and then. They're not really very popular. In fact, after the first service, one of our more prophetic people came up and said, "You gave prophets a hard time this morning." And it's fair, because prophets are troublesome. If you are a prophet, you know you are. But we need some trouble every now and then. Prophets keep the organization, they keep us as a body from just doing the same things all the time without thinking about why we do them. They ask hard questions. They initiate difficult conversations. And we need prophets in our community to bring a little trouble every now and then. Evangelists are the ones that are looking outside. They ask, why isn't this person here? Why does that person stand off in the corner and not seem to be included? Why are the people that I work with not interested in coming to hear about Jesus? Why don't more people know about this thing? And so they're the ones that help us think externally, that invite new people, that welcome new people. They're the ones that keep us from just looking inside and just thinking about ourselves. And finally, we get to the most important role here, of course. Pastors and teachers, shepherds and teachers. I'm kidding, of course. Don't be worried. But around here at PBC, this is kind of the role that we tend to be most familiar with. Pastors and teachers, these are the people that take care of the community. They're aware of spiritual needs and emotional needs and physical needs. And they're zeroed in on this group of people. How are they doing? How can I care for them? What are the issues? What do they need next? And we need pastors to continue to train and equip and care and keep the community healthy. Think about the church like a living room. The apostle built the room. The evangelist invited people to come to the room. The pastor teacher set out the coffee and donuts in the room. And the prophet is walking around saying, why is that picture hanging there? That looks ugly. And that wall should really be painted a different color. And the door doesn't open right. We need to have the door open a different way, and bringing all sorts of constructive criticism to the whole endeavor that's going on. We need all those people. We need everybody together to contribute in all those ways. But notice the way this passage is phrased. Other passages in the New Testament talk about gifts, and we often call those spiritual gifts, where it seems that God gives a gift to individuals, a gift of communication or teaching or hospitality. But here, the way this is phrased, the people themselves are the ones being given as a gift to the community. So what this means is that I am given to you as a pastor teacher. You are given to me. You are given to us as an evangelist or apostle or pastor or prophet or whatever the role is that you contribute. You are a gift to this community. You are a gift to this community. You'll see this theme regularly this morning, that the whole picture, the whole idea is that we come together, each contributing our roles, and that's what makes the body healthy. We are not defined by positions or titles or structures. Each one of us contributes in a unique way. And when that happens, the body is healthy. What that means for each of us then is that our task is to find out how it is that we can contribute and then offer ourselves. Find your role, give yourself. I remember a conversation I had with a friend in college, and she was saying that the Christian fellowship she was a part of was really filled with extroverts. And they always emphasized going out, talking to strangers, telling people on the bus about Jesus, all these things that she, as an introvert, was completely uncomfortable doing. And she described kind of shamefully how during meetings she would sit in the back and have long conversations with one person at a time and just always felt like a failure. But what she didn't realize is that what she was doing was contributing to that community in a critical way, but a very different way than they typically valued. So some of you might feel like, you know, I do this, but PBC doesn't really care about that, or the community doesn't really know that that's important. If you feel out of place, if you feel like your gift isn't what the church typically celebrates, then we need you as that gift even more so. Because that's an area that we don't tend to understand or emphasize, so we need you to contribute that to help us fill all these roles, to help us be a healthy, rounded community. Every organization tends to elevate certain gifts above others. So finding your role and offering yourself can be vulnerable. What if people don't see it? What if people don't appreciate it? What if I don't do it well? What if I'm criticized or forgotten or not noticed? But that's what it looks like to be part of a community, to offer yourself to face into that vulnerability and to trust that God's going to use you in significant ways. We are each a gift to the whole. Well, if that's true, if we're given to the community, what are we given to do? What's our responsibility as a gift? Well, the passage describes it by saying, to equip the saints for the work of ministry. Now, this is an interesting phrase. What it's saying here is that all these different roles, the people that have different tasks to do, are all working towards the same goal. But it's not doing ministry, it's equipping others to do ministry. If you've been around here for a little bit, you may have heard people use the term ministry of the saints. It's a little bit of an odd phrase, and you may think, well, I'm not a saint, so what does that mean? But biblically, in the New Testament, the word saint is used to describe anybody who believes in Jesus, anybody who has been made righteous by the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross is considered a holy one, a saint. And so the ministry of the saints is just that. It's the ministry that all of us, as followers of Jesus, do the work of God in the world. And what this means is that the leadership of the church are not the ones that are tasked with doing ministry. The leadership of the church is tasked with equipping all of us to do ministry. But there's also a sense in which all of us mutually are tasked with equipping each other. It's not just that the leadership equips you and you go do it. It's that all of us somehow contribute to the whole, equipping each other for the work of ministry so that we individually and as a group can do the work of God in the world. Sometimes we can think of the church programmatically. Now, the church is a company that produces programs that you either like or don't like or criticize. And if the programs aren't good enough, you will leave and find a better church that offers better programs. And there's a temptation to think about church that way. But that's a terrible view of the church. We are not a program machine that you get to evaluate and decide whether you like or not. We are a community contributing together to the life of the whole, holding activities and pitching in and everybody learning and growing, equipping each other together. So the question for us then is, how are you doing that? How are you equipping others for ministry? How are you helping others to do the work of God in the world? Equip others for ministry. There's a lot of ways that we equip each other. We teach the Word of God. We lead Bible studies. We counsel each other. But we also manage spreadsheets of volunteers. We train leaders and we correct false teaching and we teach our kids and we pray together and we plan events and we schedule rooms. The community, this church, this body is this dynamic network of interconnected people doing things together, helping and serving and coordinating together. But see, sometimes when people visit a new church, there's this temptation to evaluate the church based on what you're sitting in right now, the 75 or 90 minutes, whatever it is, what people call the church service. You visit a church and if you say, well, how was the church? What people mean is, how was the church service? Let me let you in on a little secret about PBC. We take this time seriously. We work hard at it. We try to make it excellent. We think it through carefully. But this thing that you're at right now, this is not the best part about PBC. It isn't. This is not the best thing that we do. And if you find a church where the best thing they do is hold a 75-minute gathering for a bunch of people, I'd say that church is missing a few things. Because this is simply where we come together. But the best thing about PBC, the best thing about a church ought to be what happens all the other times during the week. It's the relationships. It's the meals brought to a family that just had a baby. It's the counseling that happens over coffee when lives are falling apart. It's the teaching of kids. It's the meetings, other places where you pray together. It's all of those little things. It's telling people about Jesus at your workplace. It's all of the stuff of ministry that all of us do and the relationships that knit us together and how that gets expressed. That's what makes the church amazing. Not getting together and singing and listening. As important as that is, all of that isn't the best thing that we do. A church is not a service that you attend. The church is a community that you participate in. So we all do the ministry. We all equip each other. How are you called to do that? But the cool thing about this, about being a community that serves each other, equipping each other, is that that enables us to recognize seasons of life. So the point of this message is not for you to feel like, oh man, I'm not contributing enough and walk out of this room feeling terrible about yourself. That's not the goal. Because as a body, we recognize that there are different seasons. There are seasons where you have a lot to give and a lot to contribute. And there are seasons where you don't. Seasons where you need to ask for help, where you have less to give, where you're in a period of healing or restoration or exhaustion. And so as a body, we can adapt to that. We can absorb that and we can allow people to go through different stages of life and different seasons and take care of each other at one point and be taken care of at another point. And all of that fits together with how God builds us. So find your role, give yourself, equip others for ministry in the right season. We're starting to get a picture of the church. We have these different roles. We contribute to equipping each other. But how do we do it? What's the glue that does all of this? One simple word: relationships. It's not programs. It's not events. It's not leaders or vision statements or brand management or catchy slogans. We are as strong or as weak as the relationships that we have with each other. This is how our passage describes it. The whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part is working properly, makes the body grow so that it builds itself up in love. Think for a moment about a tree. What part of the tree tells the roots to grow deep and absorb water? What part of the tree tells the branches to spread out and look for light? What part of the tree tells the fruit to grow and to make sure there's a seed inside that can create another tree? What part of the tree makes the bark strong so that it protects it from harm? Is there a microchip somewhere in that tree that's controlling all those things and sending signals all the way around? No, see, each part knows what to do, and when it's doing its part, the whole tree is healthy. Now, sometimes we think about a human body kind of like that robot we saw, where we have a body and we have our brains that kind of click in. And our brains are this central command computer that tells everything in our body what to do and keeps an eye on everything and controls all the parts of our body. But that's pretty bad biology, and it's really bad theology. See, it's not that there's some one part of the body that controls the rest of the body. It's that each of our cells somehow, amazingly, knows what to do, knows how to replicate and heal and provide the function that it was designed to do. And that when each part works together, being connected by whatever each part supplies, then the whole body is healthy. There's not some central computer making sure everything's right. It's us. We, together, hold the body together. We simply fit naturally and organically. Think about an arch. It's one of the most beautiful and complicated architectural structures. The arch can't stand without all of its members together. Here's a definition from Wikipedia. An arch is held in place by the weight of all of its members, making construction problematic. Now, replace that word with church. A church is held in place by the weight of all of its members, making construction problematic. It's pretty true, right? How do you build a church? How do you build a church when each person is supposed to contribute their own thing? How do you manage all that? The wide diversity of relationships and personalities and opinions and preferences. How do you fit all those together when everything is dependent on each other and the whole thing only holds together when everybody does their part? How do you build that? You don't. I don't. We rely on the Spirit. That's what God does. God builds the body. We have to be reliant upon the Spirit working among us, directing each of us so that we fit together and hold this thing together by doing our part. It's all about relationships. What that means for us is that each of us doesn't have to know everybody and love everybody and make everything work. What we do is we find our role, we give ourselves, and we ask, who are my people? Who are the people that I'm connected to? Who's in my circle? And those are the people that I hold on to. Those are the people that I love. So for you, the question then is, who are your people? And how can you love them well? Love your people. Now, this is especially important for us to remember as we finish up this multi-year building project that we've done. And don't get me wrong, no one is more excited than I am to have these new rooms. I love new rooms and furniture and the TVs on the wall, and I get way excited about it. It's very, very exciting to me. You believe me? Good. But we have to remember that we have not upgraded our church. We have not remodeled our church. What we've done is some necessary physical work to the buildings that house our church. And we have to keep that in mind. That the point is not nice rooms, the point is the relationships that get formed within those rooms. And honestly, it's a little bit easier to remember that when your building is ugly and weird. But now that our building is nice, we could get a little too excited about the rooms. And so it's important for us to remember that the building houses relationships. It fosters community. It provides a space for something to happen. And the important thing is what happens in those rooms, not the rooms themselves. The church is first and foremost about relationships. Well, we're getting close. We understand who we are. We have these different roles. We understand our responsibility to equip each other for the work of ministry. We understand how we do that by this network of interconnected relationships that we maintain. But why? Why does this happen? Well, I said that there's no one part of the body that holds it all together, but that's not exactly the whole story. There actually is someone making it work. But it's not any one of us. Look again at our passage. The passage describes the goal as unity in the knowledge of the Son of God, that we would be mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ, and that we would grow up into every way into him who is the head, into Christ. Unity, maturity, growing up. All of these results have a common reference point. The Son of God, the fullness of Christ, him who is the head. The body is supposed to be a body so that we can grow up into the head. All that we do around here is about Jesus. We have unity that is centered on him. We are mature in the sense that we have some measure of his fullness in us. We grow up into him. I heard someone say recently that they want a little bit of God. They want just enough religion to get them through the week. You know, fill up the tank and it'll run out Saturday night and they can come back Sunday morning and get a little more God to carry them through the rest of the week. But that's not what we're doing here. That's not what a church is about. The fullness of Christ means that we are a community that becomes filled everywhere, in every place, with the presence of Jesus. Do you like English muffins? Yeah, I like English muffins. You know what they are? Somehow the words nook and cranny like epitomize English muffins to me. I see some head nods, good. So English muffins have all these nooks and crannies, and what I love is you toast English muffin, you bring it out, you spread butter on it. I love butter, almost as much as I love new rooms. And the butter just melts, goes everywhere, and it fills the nooks and crannies. Are you with me? So we're like the English muffin here, okay? My kids this morning said, Daddy, that was a weird example. So it's a little weird. But we're like the English muffin, and Jesus is like the butter, okay? Jesus gets spread all around, and he melts into all the nooks and crannies around here. All the different parts of our community get filled with Jesus. All the parts of our lives, all the little emotional parts, the physical parts, the spiritual parts, those areas that we kind of don't want Jesus to go there, everything gets filled with Jesus. The fullness of Christ comes to us. There's no more room for petty divisions, for personal agendas, ulterior motives, carefully nurtured bitterness, individual kingdoms of influence. All of the spaces are filled with Jesus. As we become the church, we are filled with Christ. That's the why. Be filled with Christ. In our house, we buy concentrated hand soap, one big jug of hand soap concentrate, and we have hand soap dispensers all around our house, in the bathrooms and kitchen, etc. And every now and then, we pour a little bit of concentrate in and a lot of water, and voila, you can wash your hands. And that's another image for us. We're like Jesus concentrate in here. This is what we do. We come together and we are filled with the fullness of Christ. And then we go out from here and we carry that fullness. We carry Jesus out into everything we do. And Jesus becomes a presence in the world. People encounter him. And if you've read the New Testament, you know that when people encounter Jesus, lives are changed. Addictions are broken. Relationships are restored. Lives are given new meaning, new purpose. Family becomes reimagined. Pain is redeemed. Life takes on an eternal perspective. As we go out into the world, as we carry the fullness of Jesus out, people encounter him and lives are changed. This is how we be a blessing to the community around us. We are filled with Jesus and we carry that. And so we can host meetings for people and we can offer our spaces and we ought to do that. But the goal then is to be Jesus to them. What people need is not a room to meet in. they need Jesus. And by inviting them here, by finding creative ways to serve our community, we can be Jesus to them. We live as a body. Jesus fills us. The world sees him. They come to be a part of our body and get filled with Jesus, and the process goes on and on. That's the picture of the church. Well, thinking back to that robot, it's a difficult thing to build a body. Our technology is getting closer. We're closer now than we were 10 years ago. But to really replicate all the complexities and intricacies and dependencies and the beauty of the human body, I don't think we'll ever quite be there. And I think that's probably a good thing. Only God can assemble a body. Only God can make us into the body of Christ. Who are we? We're different people with different roles, each contributing them. What do? We equip each other for the work that God has called us to do. How do we do that? Through our relationships, by loving each other well. And what's the result? We grow into the fullness of Jesus Christ. All of this is impossible on our own. We can't make any of this happen, but the Spirit of God works among us to do this. And I can say, as a participant of this particular community, I've been part of PBC in some capacity for about 23 years now, and I've seen this happen. I've been in seasons where I've learned from this church, where I've been discipled from this church, been in seasons where my life has been in challenge and I've been ministered to, where things have been falling apart and I've had to have people put pieces back together. And I've had seasons where I'm helping others put their pieces back together, where I've taught and discipled and helped. I've covered the gamut here. And that's the opportunity that's available. Maybe you feel like you're not quite a part of things, that there's some inner circle that you don't have access to, or you wish you could get a little more deeper. Well, there are ways. And there isn't really any inner circle here. It's just finding out where you fit, who your people are, and how you contribute to the whole. It's a beautiful thing to see that at work and to experience Jesus in a community of people. Be a part of this body. Give yourself. Be filled with Christ. Amen.